Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello and welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. Thank you so much for listening. And also, I just want to say thank you for letting me know that you're listening, because when I share this sort of stuff, you just never know if it's just going out into the ether. But I've had some really nice feedback recently, especially on the autism episodes that I did recently. So thank you for coming back to me and giving me that feedback, because it does mean a lot when I hear that. Now, today I'm going to be talking with Victoria Nabarro, and she is the co-host of a very successful podcast called Money Unfiltered, and they've also got a YouTube channel. And she's a money educator, and she's just really awesome. I know she's going to light you up, and you're going to enjoy this episode. So, Victoria, welcome. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, Caro. I am really well, thank you, especially after that wonderful introduction. And really pleased to be here because, like you say, I talk about money and finance all the time, but I am so interested and also passionate about what you're doing, really empowering people to become self-employed, run their own businesses in whatever size or shape that takes. So I'm really excited for this conversation.
Fab. So I would like you to just start by giving us a bit of a backstory about how you got to here, because I think it's fascinating always how people have reached this point of self-employment. So tell us your journey and what has brought you to here, if you can, Victoria.
Absolutely. Well, one thing I will say is that I came from a family where both my dad and my brother were self-employed. They ran their own businesses. So I think that's really helpful in the sense of having, you know, seeing evidence that it is possible to be self-employed. I always saw that growing up. And I think I always had an idea in my head that I would at some point be self-employed. But, you know, at school, had no clue what I wanted to do. Even after uni, had no idea what I wanted to do. And actually fell into financial services. So at that point in time, being self-employed just didn't seem like an option. I felt like I needed to go into the world, find out what I might like to do, gain some skills, perhaps some sort of qualification. And actually, that's one thing I will say that was really important to me. I think because I knew I had a sense that I would end up self-employed. And this doesn't necessarily go for everybody, but I think if you are somebody who suspects they will become self-employed, but wants an element of security, I think what I always thought was that if I had a qualification behind me, I would always be able to work and earn a living in one form or another, so that when I did make the leap to become self-employed, I would always have some qualification to fall back on. I'd always be employable and I'd always be able to return to a job if that made sense at the time. So I fell into financial services purely because I wanted to go out and get working. And a friend of mine said, I'm going into wealth management. It's great. It's like playing Monopoly with people's money. So I thought, oh, okay, that sounds cool. Went into it and very quickly realized that there was a lot I loved about the job of being a financial advisor. It took a fair few years to train. About 5 years, really, to really understand the job, get all my qualifications. There was a lot of exams to do. But I thought it would be a really fantastic job for me to be a financial advisor, purely because it's very much a male-dominated industry. There are so few women who are financial advisors. And I think I heard an amazing quote the other day, we can't be what we can't see. And I think we just really need more female representation when it comes to people talking about money, having financial literacy, and just even being part of the money conversation. So I thought it would be really great from that point of view. And also I came from a family where none of the women in my family actually worked or had any financial independence of their own. So that was really important to me from that aspect. But the actual industry itself, like I say, it was very male dominated. It was very much a corporate culture. It's the absolute top end of kind of, it was very much like a hard selling dog eat dog sort of industry. And that is just not the way I wanted to work. So after about 5 years, once I felt that I'd really learned, I mean, you never stop learning, right? You know that, we all know that. You never stop learning in any career. But once I felt that I'd learned enough, I decided to just take a leap of faith and give it a go on my own, being self-employed. And actually, I am a total type A perfectionist, put a lot of pressure on myself. But I think what really helped was that in this case, because I did know that I had that qualification behind me and I knew that I could go back into a job at any point, I saved up enough cash that I knew I could pay my rent and bills for 6 months, which isn't a huge amount of time. You know, some people would definitely want more security, more security than that. But to me, that felt comfortable enough. I thought this gives me a good window, a good buffer to give it a go. If it works, brilliant. And if it doesn't, I've tried it, you know, at least I've ticked that box, or I've definitely learned a lot from doing it, and I can go into a job and work. And so that's really how I became self-employed, purely from just wanting to do things differently, wanting to do things my way with my own voice in an industry where not many people like me exist.
I think that's lovely. And there were just so many things that you said there that resonated, because for me, I moved into the financial industry, becoming a mortgage broker, because I wanted to understand how mortgages worked. And I didn't think that just reading about it was enough. I somehow thought in my head, oh, I need to get qualified and be able to give advice to be able to really get to grips with it, which is like crazy because most people would just read up about it. But I wanted to become a mortgage advisor. And once I did, I realized how few female mortgage advisors there were, and also about how much men take the lead with finances. You know, everything in wealth management, investment, funding, all those sorts of things are very male dominated. Like you said, we're in this tiny minority of women wanting to understand money, relay it to the masses of women that don't move into that area and unpack it so it's not actually complex. Because I think, I don't know if men do it on purpose, but they seem to have this aura around them, which is like, oh, don't worry, little woman, we're going to handle this.
Absolutely.
And obviously not all men, but we are very, very capable. We are hugely capable of prioritizing, managing our time. And there's no reason why we can't manage our finances in exactly the same way and become financially literate in a way that I think for generations, men have wanted to create this smokescreen of like, oh, little woman, just we're going to take care of you. And I know that that is going to polarize people perhaps when they're listening, and I don't want to alienate anyone. But there is this general misogynistic stereotype of men managing money. And I want this so much to change because women are so capable. We are really hard grafters and able to look after ourselves and our families and be independent and financially independent. And that's so important that we project that message. And, you know, what you were saying about we have to be role models for people and unpack the complexities. But as I say to people regularly, business isn't needing to be overcomplicated. It's what's coming in, what's going out. And I was speaking to somebody recently, and they were actually an accountant, and they had got in such a muddle with their finances. And I had presumed that they would know what they were doing incorrectly. And when it came down to the basics, it was just, I mean, they hadn't been practicing for some while, but I really felt that they would have a grounding of financial literacy. And I'm sure that they do somewhere in there, but I had to revive it and almost give it mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to just remind them that it's very simple, coming in, going out, those sorts of things. Let's look at it on paper and let's take away the panic and the scare of the fear of, oh my goodness, I can't manage my, you absolutely can. And I think that that's what's so good about what you're doing.
Absolutely. And I think that's such a good point you raise as well. I think whether it is, you know, managing your personal finances or your business finances, we are totally capable. Anybody is. But I think you're right. I think there's such a huge element of emotion attached to the numbers that a lot of the time we just put off dealing with it and looking at it because we feel scared almost to deal with it. But I think the more we do normalize this conversation and accept that it is just part of life and it's part of well-being, if you ask me, like I think financial well-being is just as important as your mental and physical well-being. So yeah, absolutely. I think it really just is a case of normalizing this and encouraging people to kind of helping people overcome that fear and just really take control and put the power back in their own hands.
And I think that there's a huge pressure with social media and people living in this fast-paced life and this glamorous lane where they see things on Instagram and they see people with all this abundance and these things that they have, the things that they're doing, etc. And it seems so reachable. And if they just reach out and they could just spend that little bit of money, and it creates this sort of impulsive behavior to, oh, well, I'll just buy that, or I'll just get that, or I'll just go there, to sort of emulate these glamorous lifestyles that we see. And we're growing up with this society where you want to do something now, but pay for it tomorrow. But there's a consequence, because putting these things off until tomorrow is just creating this bigger and bigger sort of debt pool that we're going to have to face at some point. And then we don't start opening letters that come, etc. And it's not becoming financially responsible in a way that will enable us to live in a safe area, that we feel in control of our finances, because we're being fed and drip fed this innocuous message. It's this white noise of everybody has everything and why aren't you keeping up and doing all these things? And yes, you can too. It's easy to do it. And it's not true, is it?
It really isn't. And I can honestly say it really, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. And it angers me so much, these sorts of messages. Like, yes, we can all do this. It just completely invalidates the struggle, the real struggles that people really are having. And I wish I could ban all of the really unhelpful messages on social media that are encouraging people to spend more than they can afford, or make out that it's so easy to live an extravagant lifestyle without having inherited a huge trust fund. But I think the sad, well, I say it's sad. I think the reality is, you know, it's a shame, but also perhaps it's a bit empowering. I think the reality is that actually we do just have to take responsibility. Very much like, you know, our NHS is struggling so much now. And I think we now more than ever have to take our health into our own hands and make more of an effort to do the right thing when it comes to our health. We can't just rely so much on what's externally out there to do the work for us. And I think similarly with our money and our finances, you know, we have to take more responsibility and more charge. We are in charge of who we follow on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, and what content we're consuming. If you are consuming content that is really encouraging you to spend extravagantly, do things you can't afford, unfollow, stop it. It's not helpful. And actually, as many problems as there are with social media, there are some really, really empowering people on social media showing how they've got out of debt, how they manage their money in business and in their personal lives, how they budget, how they save when they're shopping, when they're buying presents. These are the things to consume. These are the messages we want to hear. And one thing I say to a lot of people, and it's my pleasure to share it on this podcast, is that what you see on social media does not reflect people's bank balances. Most of the people who are driving around in the flashiest cars and owning the flashiest homes are the ones that can't afford it. The people who have really made a lot of money and can afford it because they have made it and they have worked and grafted hard for that money, they don't spend it on £200 £100 bottles of champagne and, you know, ridiculously expensive things. They really spend their money on the things that they truly value.
But that's because I think they value and respect money, and they recognize that money is just a token that's used for exchanging for things, and you buy your time back and you buy experiences and things, not more material things, which are just sort of quite superficial and innocuous. And I think it's really interesting because when you talk about, you know, working really hard, that kind of is associated, I suppose, sometimes with, you know, less than struggle, things that might feel a bit uncomfortable. And that sexiness doesn't sell. You know, it is the fast cars and the holidays and the designer clothes and things which people are attracted to, particularly younger audiences, before they mature and recognize the value and the importance of work. But I think there's no purpose really if you haven't really earned what you actually have. And I think the fulfillment that you get from earning and being able to provide for yourself and your family, that's immeasurable. I can't explain how good that feels to actually, you know, not relentlessly doing hard days and hard nights and doing all that sort of stuff. But there is a sense of purpose and a sense of fulfillment and pride when you can afford something that you know that you've worked really hard to get. And I think we don't glamorize or we don't focus on that as much as we should do, because there's a huge sense of purpose in being able to reach goals and milestones and get your business to the next level and those sorts of things. Why don't we talk about that more?
I absolutely, honestly, I love that. What a great point. And I think you're so right. Listen, to me anyway, in my experience and everyone I know, there is a huge difference between spending money on something that you value when you know you have earned that money. You really feel a sense of achievement. And that is not to suggest that, you know, we shouldn't accept a generosity that comes our way, because we absolutely should. But there is such a sense of pride and achievement associated with that. And for anyone who's listening, who might have become, as so many of us inevitably do, for anyone who might have become a bit disconnected with that, I would really encourage people to think, particularly for those who are, you know, well into their career by this point. I'm sure we can all relate to that first time you got that. You might have been 15, you might have been 21, but whenever you got that first paycheck and you went out and bought something with the money you earned, that sense of accomplishment and independence, particularly for women, I think is really invaluable. So I'd encourage anyone to think back to when that moment was for them, if they have become a bit disconnected.
Yeah, because that gives you fulfillment. And I think there are many, many people, you know, in employed roles where they are working for someone else and they don't perhaps feel that sense of purpose and fulfillment. They're building somebody else's empire. And the second you're brave enough to start working for yourself and you realize that it's your money on the line every single day, your business, your reputation or whatever, and anything that you do inside your business can make a difference on the monetary income that you get at the end of that month, suddenly you're massively invested, obviously, and you have that drive and that vision, and you start behaving in a different way, and you start to recognize, or certainly you know, responsible business owners will recognize that they have to focus on the outgoings as much as they've got to focus on what's coming in, because if they're willy-nilly spending left, right and center, they're not going to be making that profit. And so it's really important to focus on outgoings responsibly and to focus on making sure that you've got enough coming in and that there's more coming in and less going out, and making responsible decisions. But that doesn't always happen overnight. It's something, you know, it's a muscle that has to be flexed, and it's perfectly normal for people to grow into that role and become more financially aware and astute in their decision making. And there are lots of ways that, as you say, you can follow different people that are making good decisions and have different role models and ask for help and that sort of thing. And that's why I love what yourself and Ellie are doing, having these conversations around money and unpacking it and not making it a dirty word and something we feel uncomfortable with and that we perhaps shouldn't be talking about as much as we should, and about women, because, you know, money is the central thing for so many things, relationships and how we're feeling and pressures and all of those sorts of things. It's the gateway to the rest of our lives, really. So how we handle it, what our blueprint is, what our opinion and our emotional responses are, those are really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you today was one of the I wanted to ask you about the biggest mistakes that you see people making with their finances, either business or personally, that you could shine some light on and give us some insights. That would be really helpful.
Yeah, I think this is just really helpful because I see people and how they interact with their money day in, day out. And also because I do have this real passion for small business in particular, but for anyone who wants to be in self-employment, actually going ahead and taking that leap, as I know you do too. So I think just the main things that I always just want to tell people, because I see it all the time, is that please don't ever think. I think what a lot of people think is they have to make loads of money, and then once they have X in the bank, then they'll manage it. Actually, and I think you'll probably say very similar, you don't grow a big business and then worry about how you're going to manage it. Actually, from the outset, manage it every step of the way. So even if you are starting out, you don't have a huge amount of, I mean, even the most fundamental thing, let's just talk about the most fundamental thing. I have all sorts of, you know, technical expertise in things like complex inheritance tax and pension planning. But ultimately, I spend so much of my time telling financially literate people that the thing they really need to focus on the most, like you just said, is spending less than they are earning. And that is just, it underpins everything. So the first fundamental thing, it does not matter how much you earn. Make sure that you are spending less than you are earning. I am so well aware of how difficult times are for people right now. People are doing really drastic things. People are selling their homes and moving back in with family after being homeowners themselves. You know, it's a really hard time, but we really have to, however difficult it is, we have to find a way to make sure that we are spending less than we are earning in any case. And even if you do have a very, very modest amount of income left over, even if it's 20, 30 pounds a month, if you can save that or invest that or put that towards your longer term financial goals, it can go a very long way. It all counts. So that's the first thing I'd say is please don't think I will manage my money when I have loads of it. You will never have loads of it if you don't manage it from the outset. And I think particularly for the self-employed, one thing that I found really kind of eye-opening for myself when I became self-employed, having previously been in employment, is actually, you know, one of the reasons a lot of us go into self-employment is that we have the capacity to earn more. Now, as you and I both know, for most people that in the early years, I certainly earned less than I would have done had I stayed in an employed position. But over the long term, you can build up a business that has a very significant value and you have the capacity to earn a lot more over the trajectory of a whole career than you would in employment. But a lot of people do go into self-employment for that ability to earn more over the career span. But I think what we don't realize are some of the financial privileges we give up that employed people do get. So when you're employed, your employer will automatically set up a pension for you by law and contribute into that. And again, this is not a sexy topic. It's not something that most young people want to think about what their life's going to be like when they're retired. But I genuinely am concerned for people who are now in their 20s, 30s, even 40s, and how they are going to manage when they're in retirement without a pension fund. And actually, for those people who are running small businesses, if they're self-employed, whether you are self-employed as a sole trader or you have a limited company, there are actually some tax advantages to gain by making some pension contributions. So please be aware that if you are self-employed, you are not automatically funding a pension as you would be with employment. So please think about just putting some small provision away for retirement, whether it's through your limited company or just as a sole trader. It's really easy to do these days. It could just be a small amount, but please do something. But the main thing that I really want to get across on this one, particularly for your listeners, I think, is I've experienced this myself. If you're employed, And hopefully you have a reasonable employer. Some of us do, some of us don't. But generally speaking, if you get sick or you have some sort of family emergency, whatever happens, you know, you are eligible. Hopefully your employer will understand. You might be eligible for sick pay. You might have some life insurance provided by your employer, which will basically make sure that you are okay in the event that you have some sort of you're unable to work, essentially, due to illness, injury, or something else. When you are self-employed, you do not have that level of protection in place. And it's absolutely vital that you implement that yourself. Because I think a lot of us, when we're self-employed in the early years, you know, we don't have necessarily a plan B. A lot, and we absolutely need a plan B. It's fantastic. If you're a year, 2 years in and you're running a business and it's all going great, that's brilliant. But a lot of the time, our business depends on us being there, present and able to work. And we have to plan for the scenario. What if we are unable to work for whatever reason? So I would really encourage people to look at, this would come under the heading of life insurance and specifically income protection. You can absolutely speak to a financial advisor like me about it, but there's no need to whatsoever. Just a quick Google search of income protection policies for the self-employed. That is a really key message to get out there. That's something I think anyone who is self-employed needs to think about. How would I manage? How would I pay my mortgage, my rent, my bills, if I was unable to work?
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And I've covered a topic previously about pensions, but we didn't focus so much on the income protection. But that is such a key thing for people because they're so exposed and vulnerable. I know my son had an illness last year and he had to take 3 or 4 weeks off, and it really has impacted his finances, and he's doing overtime, etc. Even now, 6 months later, sort of doing some catch up on some bills that weren't paid, because those 3 weeks of no work is just a dent. It's a huge something that you're expecting, relying on. It's not something factored in like a holiday where you know you're going to be out of work and money for a set period. These are unexpected things and nobody knows what is around the corner. And I loved what you were saying about, you know, start managing your finances from day one, because you're setting yourself up for patterns and processes and the way that you're going to be handling bigger amounts of money as it starts to build. And that's exactly the message I try and give about managing your business, even when it's, you know, transitioning from a hobby into a business in those early days and you think, oh, I'm not big enough to do such and such, or whatever. You need to start treating your business like a business from day one. You're sending this message out into the universe. And from what I'm hearing you saying, you're doing the same with the money. You're saying, I can handle small amounts of money. And guess what? The universe will give me bigger amounts of money to manage. Is that true?
Absolutely. Exactly spot on. That's exactly what I kind of think and preach.
Yeah, because we need to be starting to practice, you know, in the early days when it doesn't matter so much if we're not so good with the investments, because you don't want to have invested, you know, 100,000, goodness, if you have that much and make a mistake. You'd rather do that with £100. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah. And it's the same with your business. Find out the different tools and the things that you need to help you manage it, so that when you start to get really big and much busier, you're going to have those processes and those systems in place. Because the thing is, at the beginning, when we don't have much money, we often have a lot more time, don't we? And we've got that time to research, time to look into it, so that we get more education and we start to know what works for us and what doesn't, what feels right, what doesn't. So as we start to grow and have more money, more success in our business, etc., we've got some basic building blocks on which to build in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, completely. And that's exactly what I say about personal finance as well. And it really is exactly the same with business.
Yeah, perfect. And with regards to money conversations, I mean, it sometimes it is a bit of a taboo thing, isn't it, to talk about? I don't know why we're so icky still with money conversations. What do you think that's about?
I mean, honestly, it's so funny because I think because I spend all day every day talking about money, I forget what I know. It's just such a huge taboo. That is why we have a podcast called Money Unfiltered, to try really hard to get people talking about money. But I think I've become so comfortable with it because I talk about it all day every day. That often, you know, like I'll ask people a question and they'll say, oh, Victoria, that's a bit personal. And I won't have even sort of realized. I think the reality is I think the reason where, you know, where does this come from? I think it's because we tie up so much of our self-worth with our bank balance, essentially. And, you know, I think what I've learned so much, and I do understand that I'm in a really privileged position here because I get to see people with a lot of money and people who don't have a lot of money and understand, you know, what has got them to where they are now. And, you know, yes, we do hear about phenomenal success stories where people have come from having very, very little money, a very disadvantaged background, and become very wealthy. And those stories are great. They are so inspiring to hear. But to be clear, that is the 1%. It really is. You just cannot possibly compare one person's. I might meet somebody who's earning a £25,000 salary and has £10,000 in the bank. And the fact that they've got there, they might have all sorts of challenges. And for them to be earning £25,000 and have £10,000 saved in the bank might be a phenomenal achievement compared to someone who's earning £250,000 and has £100,000 in the bank, you know, who was given a job really easily. You know, they might have a family member who owned a big company. They might have been gifted an inheritance. We just cannot compare our financial positions, but we do. And I think the more we normalize it, the better. One thing I will say as well around the money conversation and the fact that we don't talk about it, I think it's a self-perpetuating cycle. So because we don't talk about it, people feel they can't talk about it, and then it's a taboo. But, you know, the taboo continues and intensifies. But I think one thing I found, I've been really, really quite outspoken about my frustrations with, listen, I am all for celebrating and enjoying life. I love nothing more than going to a big wedding and celebrating my friends getting married, having birth, you know, great times for birthdays and Christmas and all of the things. I absolutely love it. But what I'm really unhappy about is how many people I'm seeing who are putting their own financial health in a poor situation because they feel social pressure to attend every single event, every single birthday, buy an extravagant gift when they can't afford it. And what I say is, if you have family and friends who love you, they will not appreciate you putting yourself under financial stress to attend their birthday. And I've been really outspoken about people just having to set those boundaries in place. It is not easy, I really understand. But I thought, you know, similarly to what we said, if this is what I think, I'm going to have to be the one to do it. And whenever I have said in a group setting, it might be a hen party. You know, if you're my age, you are likely going to have 3 or 4 hen parties a year to go on, and they are costing hundreds of pounds a time. Then it's hundreds of pounds for the weddings. And before you know it, you've spent thousands of pounds a year on celebrating everyone else, which of course would be amazing in an ideal world, but we just have to make our choices. And when I have said things like, I'd love to come on this, I can't really afford it, maybe I'll meet you guys for part of the, you know, we know what hens parties are like now, it'll be a whole weekend event. I might say, I'll come meet you guys for brunch, something like that. What I find is that when one person does speak up, it's a domino effect and everyone then feels safe.
It's about that permission, isn't it? It's about that, oh, somebody else is like me. And it's always the first person to put their hand up and say, oh God, actually, that's going to really set me off track with my sort of finances. I'm so sorry. I would love to. It's not that I don't love you and that I wouldn't love to be there. I just actually can't afford it because I've also got 4 more that I want to be able to take some part in.
Absolutely. And one thing I'll tell you what, I've found a lot of comfort, rightly or wrong, you know, this stuff is all irrational, but psychologically, since having a business, I've felt this real, and I'm sure your audience will feel the same, you know, your business, as we've talked about, your business is like your baby. And for whatever reason, I feel more psychologically comfortable putting my business before, like putting my business first rather than myself. So, you know, I feel really comfortable with saying, you know, I can't afford this right now. This, you know, I could pull the money from my business to spend on this thing, or I can keep it in my business to spend on administrative costs or whatever, and that really is more important because that is my future. That is it's my independence.
It's more impactful, isn't it, in day-to-day stuff?
Yeah, for sure. And it's also, you know, whatever I'm putting out into the world with my business, it doesn't matter whether you are a human rights lawyer doing phenomenal things, you know, kind of life-altering things for people, or you own a hair salon that people just love. It's the highlight of their week to come in and have that empowering experience, that positive interaction, and feel good about themselves. You know, what we do with our businesses, I think we underestimate the positive impact we're having. So prioritize your business, prioritize your own financial health, and just be, if there is anyone listening, try and be that brave and courageous one to say, yeah, I don't really think that I want to go spend £50 going out for dinner tonight, but you know, let's cook at home instead, and we'll all have a lovely time. And you'll often find that everyone else is like, thank goodness you said that.
Yeah. Oh, what a great note to finish on. I really love that, because yes, you're right. It's about boundaries and about permission. And we really need to get comfortable with that in our finances. So Victoria, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us today. If our listeners would like to find out more about you and to connect, where is the best place for them to go to do that?
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to be a guest on a podcast for once, rather than the host. But people can find me on Instagram at Victoria_Nabarro. That's NAB for Bravo, ARRO. They can find me on the Money Unfiltered podcast, at which you can find literally just on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple. And my brand new website will be coming soon. But in the meantime, if you want to connect with me, the best place to find me is LinkedIn. Just search for Victoria Nabarro. There aren't too many Victoria Nabarros floating around, so you will be sure to find me there.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. I'm going to put all those links in the show notes so people will be able to find you. So that just leaves me to say thank you. I hope everybody has a wonderful week that's listening. Earn lots of lovely money. Do not let it stress you. And until next time, let's catch up soon.
Thanks for listening to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment, and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.